Right, so in the bottom of Zayin Mem Beis, the Gemara there is quoting from the Mishnah. The new Mishnah told us that when after all the dam has been sprinkled, so you have the par and the sar, the goat and the cow, that you have to go burn out outside the base of Mikdash. So the Gemara said, the Mishnah said that they would carry them on these bimakolos. How do I pronounce it? Bimaklos? Maklot. These beams, these sticks, four people would carry them over. So the Gemara says, kalab bimakolos, amar biyochan kimin kalia, like weaving. So tan lohaya minaschan nisuach basa ola, ela or agabi basa. So the Gemara quotes from the Braisa that they would not cut up the meat the way it was done for the Ola. Rather, they would leave it in the skin and then cut it up. So the way it was done for the Ola was they'd first skin the animal, then they'd cut the meat up, and then they would burn the meat. When we come to the par and the sar of Yom Kippurim, they would leave the skin on, then cut it up with the skin on, and then they'd burn it. That's the question. So that's the difference, that they would not skin the animal first. So Gemara says, how do we know that they would not skin the goat and the par, that rather they would just cut it up and burn it that way? So Gemara says, Minahani Milay, Ditanya, Rebbe Omer Nemar Kan or Ubasar Peresh. So Rashi quotes the pasuk. See Rashi, two lines from the bottom says, Nemar Kan, Bipar Bisar. It says, by the goat and the cow of Yom Kippurim, it says, Es orosam, ves bisarim, ves pirsham. That's pasuk. So those three words, the skin, the meat, and the perish, the innards. And then the Gemara says, v'nemar lahalan, it says, over there, Gemara says, or basar perish. And Rashi quotes that pasuk, the bottom, last Rashi says, nemar bipar koi mashiach, or basar perish. And the pasuk exactly is, ves or apar ves kol bisaro al rosho, v'akrav v'karvo parshu. So two pesukim, both pesukim mention the words or basar perish. So what's the connection? It's some type. It's an interesting gzer shava. Normally gzer shava is one word. This is three words comparing the two these two pesukim. So malahalan aide nisuach below aide hefshet. Just like there, when it comes to the kohen mishuach, which means the kohen gadol, who violates an aver, who has to bring a carbon, his special carbon, you don't skin it. You rather cut it up when the animal within the skin, and then you go burn it. Here too also, you do not skin the animal, rather you cut up the animal part of the sire with the skin on and then you burn it. So Mara says, so Hasam Manolan, how do you know when it comes to the Kohen Mashiach? So we see there's a connection between the Kohen Mashiach and the par and sire of Yom Kippur. But how do you know that when it comes to Kohen Mashiach you do not skin it? So here, Titanya, the Karvu, Parshu, Vahotzi. So this is the pasuk in the Parsha Vayikra, where it talks about the whole pasuk. I'll read the whole pasuk on the side here. This or par, the skin of the cow. This is talking about the par hamashuach of the Kohen Gadol, not of Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol violates an aveira the rest of the year. And the pasuk says, "Ves kol b'saro rosho v'akrav v'kibro parasho." You take this goat, or rather the cow of the Kohen Gadol, you bring outside el makom tar el shevach hadeshin v'sarf also al ezim. You burn it. So the pasuk there says, the Gemara says again, Ditanya, v'karvo uparsho v'hotzi. It says it's innards. Sorry, v'karvo rather. You have to be v'kibru upirshu. What's the v'kibru upirshu? They're both types of things that are inside the animal. Kibru, I think innards and pirshu is made the waste that's inside, right? So the kirvu pirshu v'hotzi, you take it out. Milamed shemotzi shalem, you take it out whole. It doesn't say cut it up at all. It says you take it out, the kirvu pirshu together. So Gemara says yachol yisarfenu shalem. You might think you're supposed to burn it shalem also, because again the Gemara pasuk says you take out the kirvu pirshu, the innards and the waste all together as one unit. So you might think when you take it out, you're supposed to also burn it as one unit. Yachol again, Yisar Fanu Shalem. Nemarkan Rosho Vikarav. It says by the Kohen Mashuach that its head and its karav, its legs, the Nemar Lahalan. It says there by the Nemar Lahalan, Rosh Vikarayim. Let's read those words, I guess. Rosho Karav. But that's the new Girsa? Okay, so it says there also in the context of an ola, also the same words, rosho v'krov, malahalan, just like by an ola, aide nisuach, you cut up the ola before burning on the mizbeach, Afkan Aydin Yisuach. So too, when it comes to the Korban Meshuach, you're supposed to cut it up before burning it. Now you're burning it at different places now. The Ola gets burnt in the Mizbeach, this gets burnt outside. No, not yet, because you'll see the difference. But where is Shalem? No, we say no. We said Yachal. You might think you would have thought.
No,
you take it out Shalem, but then you cut it up before you burn it.
I think what they do is they first cut, they cut the middle and they take out the insides, but they don't skin. Once the insides are out, then they cut it in pieces, right?
Well, then what I was about to say now, at what point do they cut it?
Okay.
So Ola, so both cases we have right now, that the Ola you cut it up before burning it, and by the Korban Meshuach you cut it up before burning it. So Gemara says, well, imala halam, when it comes to there, that by an Ola, Ide hefshet, you skin it first. You take the Ola, you skin it, then you cut it. So you might think, Afkan Ide hefshet, maybe here too also. When it comes to Korban Meshuach's carbon, maybe you should first skin it and then cut it up. So the Gemara says, Tamalomar vikirva upirshu, that it's with the innards and with the waist, my tamud, what's the drush? What does that mean? Amar papa kishem shepirshu bekirbo kach beso ba'oro. Just like the pirshu, the waist is still in the inside, so too the bus is supposed to still be within the skin. So again, somewhat of a complicated drush back and forth. In the end day, what comes out is as follows. When it comes to an ola, what you do is you first skin an ola, you cut up the ola, and then you put it on the fire in the mizbeach. When it comes to Korban Meshuach, you leave the skin on. You cut it with the skin on and put it onto the fire outside, or wherever you're burning it, outside the Beis HaMikdash somewhere.
The Korban Meshuach and also the Pari Seder, these are all chatos, aren't they? They're all chatos.
Yeah.
So what's the habit in it that you're doing the same manner? How do you normally handle a chatos?
Similar to an olah, because normally a chatos, a son of it goes to the Kohen to eat.
Right, this is all, this is
burning. This, exactly, kulo kalil. It all goes up a different place, but just like an ola goes on the fire, this bech, this goes on the fire of the, wherever the outside, but makom hadeshen.
So it's according to this, the pirsho, meaning the waist and the innards, whatever they call it, they're taken up away at the same time that he cuts it in pieces or before?
Let's see, at what point do they do that?
I thought that they cut it, they take out the innards, they put it on the Mizbeach, and then they take the animal to a full, and then they cut it later. But maybe I don't know where I got that idea from. That's how they all, right? I think so.
Not sure.
Right, no, that was in my mind. Is that green? Can I borrow that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So dry.
Fine. The Gemara continues on and says, "Me'im asai metamnet begadim." So the halacha is, Rashi told us in the Mishnah that the pasuk in Achrimos tells us that the one who soreif osam, the one who burns the par and the sar in Yom Kippur, they are going to be metamnet as metamnet begadim. And the Mishnah had recorded in Machlokas at what point is the person who's being soreif the par and sar, at what point will their begadim become tamnet? So the Tanakhama says that they become Tameh once they leave the walls of the Azara. And the opinion of Rabbi Shimon held that no, once most of the cow or goat has caught fire, that point they're going to be Tameh Begadim. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanon, Yotzi El Mechutz L'machane. Yeah.
We're talking about the Sira Mishtaleach.
No, that was yesterday. Now it's a new halacha.
Ah, okay.
Rashi quoted a pasuk in Mesorif Osam, the one who burns the Sar Lashem and the Par, they're going to have their begadim.
Okay.
So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanon, Yotzi El Mechutz L'machane V'sarfo. So this is a pasuk in this Achimos, right, when you take out the rest, I'll read the whole pasuk on the side here. Ves par chatas ves sar hachatas, asher huvas damam lecha peber kodesh, that which you used in the base of Megdash and Yom Kippur. Yotzi el mechutz lamachana, you take it outside. Ves sarfu ba'esh es orosam besarim ves pirsham, you go out and burn it. The Gemara says, what do you learn from the pasuk of Yotzi el mechutz lamachana ves sarfo? Lehalan atanosin lehem shalosh machanas, over there, when it comes to which case? Of the Par Mashiach, I think, right? Malahalan, let's see.
The Par of Kohen and Mashiach.
Right, so.
Par Ha'elim Dvar.
Okay. So those things, there are a list of a few karbanos that get burnt outside Kor Meshuach, the Parhelim Davar, which is where the Rov Tzibur had violated an Avera because of an incorrect Torah. So these are types of karbanos that get burnt outside. So the Gemara says, Lahalan ato nosin lehem shalosh machnas. Over there, by these examples of Kor Meshuach and the like, you take it outside the three camps, meaning outside of the three camps are the base of Migdash, Har Bais, and Yerushalayim. You take it somewhere outside of Yerushalayim, and you burn it there. But when it comes to the case of the Par and Sari of Yom Kippur, you only take it out one camp, only outside the base of Migdash. So im kein lama nemar michutz l'machane. So why does it say take it outside the michutz l'machane? Lomar l'cha kevin sheyotza chutz l'machane achas mitam migadim. So I think the lach is that really even here you're supposed to take out three camps. So if you're supposed to take it out by the Par and the Sari, also three camps, why does a pasuk seem to imply you only take it outside one camp? It should really be telling you it takes out three camps. So the drash is, why does it mention one camp? To tell me that when you leave one camp, meaning when you leave the Azara, you're going to Metam and Begadim, even though you're not supposed to burn it until you've left Yerushalayim, but when you've left the Azara, already then your Begadim are going to become Tameh.
The rest of the words of the pasuk says that why that need to show that Mechutz L'machane is in regards to the Begadim.
Say that one more time. That
says the pasuk says v'asoref otam mechapez ugadav v'erachat v'esaru b'mayim. That means that the bgadim is mitamim. Why mechutz l'machane needs to hint that in regards to the bgadim?
No, because the halacha is we're learning halachas of from par and sari Yom Kippur. We're learning from par b'shuach. Now, just like the par b'shuach gets burnt three camps,
yeah.
So too we have to learn. The Yom Kippur, Par and Sar get burnt three camps, outside three camps. So Gemara says, so why is it mentioning you're burning it outside one camp only? That's not true. The halacha is three camps. The drash is, because once you leave one camp means when you leave the base of Migdash, or the Azara, the same thing, once you leave it, that's when your begadim are going to
what
become
coming.
So
when they went to Midbar, there was the Heichal, the Levi, and Israel.
Correct.
These three camps. Now then, with the Yerushalayim,
it's based on Mikdash,
Mishkan and the
Har Bais.
Oh, it's not Kodesh Kodesh.
Here it says, yeah. Aleph is Machane Shechina, Shevach Haya, Mishkan, Lechatzir, Mishkan. Second, you have Machane Leviya, Shevach and Levi, the Machane Israel. And I guess it's the same thing in Eretz Israel.
So that corresponds to the base of Mikdash, Har Bais, and Yerushalayim. That's outside the three camps. Yerushalayim being the last camp. So you have to take it outside there to burn. So if you have to take it outside three camps, why does the pasuk seem to imply that you only have to take it out one camp? The drush is, the one camp is telling me that's when you become tamei. The begadim become tamei once you leave one camp, even though you can't burn it until you've left Yerushalayim.
But what I'm saying is that the continuation of the pasuk says clearly about the begadim. No?
Continuation of the pasuk.
What is the pasuk?
You're saying not drush, you're saying it's obvious.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, that's what you're saying. This pasuk, by the way, is talking. This pasuk goes back to the pasuk of Par Meshuach. Actually, the drash is about Par Meshuach. So why does it bring a pasuk from there? It's a very long rashi here, a bunch of different girsas, different psukim here. But according to what I have on the side here, it sounds like this pasuk is being brought. Maybe this is a mistake. I don't know. I think we're talking about Yom Kippur, so I'm going to leave that aside for now. But I'll read the pasuk from Yom Kippur. Then it says, "Yotzi el mechutz l'machane v'sarfo ba'eshes arasam." You take it outside the camp and you burn it. The Gemara says that's not true. Based on the various Gzeir Shavas, you burn it outside three camps.
Doesn't say anything about Gadim.
Not by Luchos Machane. It says it.
So what is this pasuk? What is this pasuk from? V'asoref otam yichabez b'gadav v'rachtez v'sarbo mayim.
Must be the very next pasuk.
Sham, it says Sham.
Yeah, it doesn't have Sham as... Right, so here, look, it says, Yotzi amechutz l'machane v'sarfu ba'ish. Next pasuk, v'asari v'asam yichabez begadav. Doesn't say at one point. Doesn't say when does begadim become tameh. says you burn outside the camp. And next pasuk, and the one who burns it, his begadim are metame.
So why it's
what?
It's implied that the begadim metame.
Maybe, but it's more of a stira, the fact that it says you burn it outside one camp. That's not true. You burn it outside three camps. So why did it say mechutz l'machane? Tell me, that's not where you burn it. That's where the begadim are going to become metame. It's not that obvious from the pasuk. So okay, the Gemara says now that where are we? V'hasa minalan. From there, how do we know over there that you go outside three camps? I guess how do you know over there when it comes to the par mishuach you have to burn it outside three camps? Says the Gemara, the Tanya, v'hotzias ka par chutz l'shalosh machnas. You're supposed to take out the cow three camps. Ata omer chutz l'shalosh machnas. You say three camps. Oh, eino elo chutz l'machna achas. Maybe it really only means you take it outside just one camp. Kishu omer bepar ha'eda, par eda, in another context, when it says el mechutz l'machna, shein tamalomar. Why did it say chutz l'machna in the context of par ha'eda? That's unnecessary. Shein tamalomar. You don't need to say that. Sharei kvar nemar visarof oso kashir sarof es par rishon. You're supposed to burn the par ha'eda like you did by the par mishuach. Why did it come along matam lomar el mechutz l'machna? Why does it repeat el mechutz l'machna? Litein l'machna shnia. So again, when it comes to par ha'eda, where's that pasuk here? The Allah psukim, if you have to read all psukim to really appreciate what's going on here, the par ha'eda already tells you you're supposed to do the same halachas as when it comes to the par mishuach. So once you have all the halachas, so already we know you're supposed to take it outside one camp. Then it says, nonetheless, it says in the pasuk, you're supposed to take it out mechutz l'machana. So that adds yet a second machana. And the Gemara says, uchshuhomer mechutz l'machana kvar nemar el shefach ha'deshim. It repeats it twice. You have to take it outside to the Shefach HaDeshen, which is the place where you burn it. Why does it repeat it? Teinu machane shlishis. To tell me you take it outside three camps. So there are a bunch of drashas here, which again, you can't really appreciate until you read inside the psukim and see how everything works out. But there are two extra psukim, which tell me when it comes to the par mishuach, you're supposed to take it outside three camps. Once we establish that the par mishuach goes outside three camps, through the Gzer Shavas, we say also by the par and sar of Yom Kippur, you also take it outside three different camps. So says the Gemara now, Rabbi Shimon, Hai mechutz l'machane, my avilei. What's Rabbi Shimon going to do with chutz l'machane? Now, Rabbi Shimon from our Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon from our Mishnah said, it's not true. The extra word, el mechutz l'machane, for Yom Kippur, does not tell me that's the point when the begadim are metame. Because Rabbi Shimon held that begadim are not metame until you've burnt most of the par and most of the site. So what's Rabbi Shimon going to do with that extra word of el mechutz l'machane? It can't mean literally you burn it outside mechutz l'machane. Because we already just proved that you burn it outside of the three camps. So what's El Mechutz L'machana coming to teach Rabbi Shimon? Says the Gemara, Mibayle he needed it l'chedetanya, for the following brisa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Nemar Kan Mechutz L'machana, V'Nemar L'Hal Mechutz L'machana, Ma Kan Mechutz L'Shosh Machanos, Av L'Hal Mechutz L'Gimel Machanos. It says, it's a Gzer Shava Mechutz L'machana. Just like Par Meshuach, it's outside three camps, so too when it comes to the, different. This is referring to the Paraduma, according to Rashi. Just like when it comes to the Paraduma, it's outside three camps, so too when it comes to the Par, it's outside three camps. Is that what it's referring to? Let's see.
So it's telling you Chiddush by Paraduma. It's not to give you a limud by Parayim Kippur.
Let's see. We're applying it to Paraduma. We're learning from Yom Kippur to Paraduma. I see. So you look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Nemar kan bepar yom kippurim, v'nemar lahalon bepar aduma, v'hotzios el mechutz l'machana." Ma kan, just like here, bepar mahandisraf mechutz l'gimel machnas. But just like Yom Kippur, you burn outside three camps. Af shchitas para aduma mechutz l'gimel machnas. So we're using el mechutz l'machana. It's supposed to be an extra word in Yom Kippur to apply it to the din of paraduma. So the Gemara says, Malahalan b'mizrach hashu Yishalayim, just like over there by the Paraduma, it's on the eastern side of Yishalayim. Afkan b'mizrach hashu Yishalayim. So too, when it comes to the Yom Kippur, it's burnt somewhere on the eastern side of Yishalayim. Rabbanan heicha. So that's what he learns. What does Rabbi Shimon do with it? That teaches him the location of where the burning of Yom Kippur is going to take place, based on Gzer Shava Paraduma. We're comparing the lachas, so it now avails us a word to use to learn from Paraduma. It's burnt on the eastern side of Yerushalayim. Now, Rabbanan Heiches Araflo. So Rabbanan, who used the Mechutz L'machaneh to teach me the din of when the begadim become tameh, where do they burn it? Where does the burning take place? What's their drasha? So Chedetanya, the Braisa says, Heichan Nisrafen. Where were they burned? The Par and Sar of Yom Kippur. The Tzvona Shel Yushalayim, the northern part of Yushalayim. Rashi explains, Shekol Masa Chatas B'Tzafon, because Allah is that these were Par and Sar were Chataos, and all the carbon Chatas take place in the north, for example, like Yushecht did in the north of the Azara. Everything goes to the Tzafon. So that's the reason why we do it in the northern part of Yushalayim. V'chutz L'Shlosh Machnos, and also has to be outside of three Machnos, like we proved before. Rabbi Yossi argues on the Tanakam of this Brisa, Omer, a base hadeshin is rafin, you burn on the base hadeshin, which Rashi says, a base hadeshin, top line, the tzarech sheyaktim, the sham deshin, hamizbeach, she nikra kodum lachin, makum shevach hadeshin, michlala tanakama lo tzarech. So you're supposed to, in that area, it doesn't argue on where it takes place. He agrees it takes place in the northern part of Yerushalayim. But what he argues is you're supposed to be maktish, say this place, you're designating it, you're infusing Kedusha to this area, that this has to be a place called the Shevach Hadeshin. That's what it has to be called. And the Rabbanan, the Tanakhama of this Brisa, doesn't require that Kedusha, anywhere that naming, exactly. So Amar Rava, Rava says, Man Tana de Palagala de Briosi.
But they will do it in the north, right outside the Chomos?
Well, they have to take it outside the three camps. So somewhere outside the walls of Yerushalayim, somewhere in the north. Now, it doesn't tell us exactly where in the north.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure how far it has to be, if at all, but...
It would be now, let's say, on the way when you go on Route 1, right?
Route 1 is... I don't know, is that north?
Going, let's say, to Ramat Eshkol or going to... Yeah, I mean, that's going north.
Yeah, I don't know the direction. I just follow my GPS there. And that goes north there. From Ramat Eshkol, you're saying it would be right outside Yerushalayim?
Ramat Eshkol is the north, right? The north. I mean, it would be before that, right? After the outside.
Maybe. Yeah, it doesn't tell us how far north it has to be. I'm not sure it makes a difference, but there's no indication from the Gemara that it has to be specifically anywhere. Like, can you go up as far north as Lebanon? I don't know.
You probably have to as soon as possible because you don't in Marim and Amitzvah.
You're saying just...
has to be as soon as you can reasons. Do it, probably. Yeah,
maybe. So Gemara says, Amar Rava says, Naman Tana de Palagalera de Biosi. Who's the opinion that argues Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yossi was the one who says he requires that you have to designate this area as a place called Beis Hadeshin. Who's the opinion that does not require that? So the Gemara answers, Rava answers, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Tanya, El Shefech Hadeshin Yisraf, Sheyehe Lesham Deshin. So there has to be there a place of Deshin. Comes along with that Brisa, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer Sheyehe Mekomo Meshufach, nothing to do with the name. It doesn't have to be called a place called the Shefach Hadeshin. It has to be Meshufach, has to be what? Like slanted? Sloped?
Right?
Yeah, like a slope, right. Has to be sloped. But not that you have to call it a place. So see here, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the one who learns this Joshua Shefach Hadeshin differently. Not that you have to call it Shefach Hadeshin, but rather has to be a place that's Meshufach, that's sloped. What is Deshen? That's it's like a place where you burn all the ashes.
Because it says Klomar, you know, Dawn. Makom kaze, such a place, she'ilu itnu sham Deshen.
Deshen is
Yishafech,
Yishamat
HaMidon.
Ashes, yeah. No? Deshen is ashes.
Yishafech?
You pour it.
You will like slide down.
Ah, right. Okay, Deshen.
So Amar Le Abai says back to Rava, Dilma Bimkomo Meshufach Hu Depligi. So maybe Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov agrees that it has to be called the Shefach Hadeshin. He just adds an additional requirement that it also has to be sloped. But whoever he doesn't explicitly say that it doesn't have to be called Shefach Hadeshin. So it's unclear, they think, from this. You should look at Rashi. Rashi says the first short line, first narrow line, he says, "V'dilma b'mekomo meshuvach hu d'pligi." Umodi Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov sheyaktim shem deshin. You're supposed to put deshin there first and designate it as a place of deshin. Ela debay nami mekomo meshuvach. But it also, in addition to that, having to be makdim deshin, calling it a place of deshin, it also has to be sloped. So Abai says there's not a proof from this case that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the one who does not require to have a shem deshin before him.
Why? Because Rabbi Jacob maybe also holds that it has to be a shame.
Deshin,
he's,
right.
He's
adding
just
on. Adding on. Right. Tanur Rabbanon, Hasarif, Padukh is Hasarif. Hasarif metame begadim, vloha matis es haor, vloha msades emaracha. So the one who burns it is the one who's going to be metame begadim. Talking about on Yom Kippur, the one who burns it, he's getting his clothing. Not the one who lights the fire, and not the one who sets up the maracha, the wood, but rather the one who burns it. Ve'eza zeha, ve'ezu sarif. Who's the one who burns it? The guy who lights the fire is not the one who burns it. For the one who's, you know, stoking the coals and moving around the wood to make sure the fire is being maintained, and the one who keeps pushing the animal back in, all the limbs, that person who's involved in the process of the burning, he's the one who's called Asarif, and it's his begadim that become mitamin. Yachal af mishinasu efer mitamin begadim. Maybe once it reached the point of ashes, and the person's still, I don't know, playing around with the fire, maybe at that point he'll also... That person will also become, his begun will become Tameh. So says the Gemara, Tamalomer Osam. Osam mitamim begadim, velo mishinasu efer mitamim begadim. Them, the Osam, the parasari, while they're still intact, that's the point where it's going to be mitamim begadim. Once it's no longer Osam, rather it's simply ashes, that will no longer be mitamim the begadim. Comes along with Belazar Bereshimon and Omer, hapar mitamim nitachabasar enu mitamim begadim. So he says, no, the cow is metame, but not the if it's cut up. I thought you cut it up before you burn it. Right, so the way it's interpreted here, at least, it says, based on a Rambam here, in Peish Mishnah, it says, Nimas. Shouldn't really be mean nitach. Nimas means it's really disintegrated to almost nothing. Sound like the same thing. The first,
they're both like saying the same thing.
Right, that's the Gemara's about to say, what's the difference? So both opinions here, the Tanakhama says, when the par and sar is intact, it's metame, but afer it's not. And the second opinion, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says the same thing, that when it's not nimas, when it's not melted, literally, but when it's not... disintegrated, that's when it's not metame. Sound like the same exact thing as Afer. They both say, when it's Afer, when it's ashes, it's not metame begadim. So asks the Gemara, my benai, what's the difference between these two opinions? Ik benai u dishavya charucha. Shavya charucha, Rashi says, means dishavya charucha, dahavi nisach habasar, vefer mi alohavu. When it's singed, but it's not yet ashes, it's black, but still it's a thing that's very burnt, but still intact, but it didn't crumble up yet into ashes. That's the difference. So according to the Tanakhama, well, since it's not yet ashes, it's going to be metame the person who's involved. According to the second opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, well, it is nitach, according to his understanding. It is completely black and burned. It will no longer be metame begadim, even though it's not yet ashes. Okay, says the Gemara now, Masnisen, quotes from the new mission, last mission of this parak. Amrulo l'koin gadol. Higiyas sar l'midbar. The goat reaches the midbar. So they tell the Kohen Gadol, by the way, the goat got to the cliff. How does they know? They're far away. Minayin hayyodin. Shegiya sar lemidbar. How do they know to tell the Kohen Gadol the sar got there? So dirchos hayu osin. They made these different flags or rags of some sort. The umanifin besudrin. Wait, no. Dirchos are. How they define the word Yerchaos? B'nei Adam, Rashi says. What?
Watchmen.
Okay, they had these different watchmen. And the Manif and Mesudun, they had these handkerchiefs that they would wave. The Yodin Shegiya Sar Midbar, and they would know that the goat reached the Midbar. So you look at Rashi, Rashi tells you, let's read the first Rashi because it's important. Amru lo l'kohen gadol, she'enu rashai l'haskel b'avoda acharis ad she'giyah sar l'midbar. He's not allowed to start the next stage of the avoda until he knows that the goat got to the midbar. She'nemar b'shilachas ha'sayir b'midbar, v'achar kach v'eschel ha'chatas yaktir b'mizbecha. Only then is he allowed to go burn the fats on the mizbech. And d'archaos are b'nei adam omdim yushalayim l'tzuk. They had these watchmen waiting in a line, in a row, not next to each other, but from a distance so they could see each other. Yushalayim l'tzuk, from Yushalayim up until the cliff. They would wave when the goat got to the cliff. The first guy would wave, the next guy would wave, and the whole thing until finally it got to the guy next to the base of Mikdash. So that's what the process was like. So the Gemara says now, Mishra quotes from another opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Why do you have to wait for all these guys, these watchmen, to wave the flags? I have another way. There's a big simon, a big sign I know how to tell when they got to the midbar. The distance from Yushalayim until Beis Chidura, which was the beginning of the midbar, So, and you look at Rashi ad beis chidudo, who rosh hamidbar. This is the entrance into the midbar. V'sham niskayim v'shilach hasasar b'midbar. Although it takes another 9 mil, we said 12 mil according to our mayor, it takes 12 mil to get to the cliff. It only takes 3 mil to get to the midbar. Once you get to the midbar, he could already start the process. It's very interesting that if it's about the midbar right now, why before did Rashi interpret it as being from the cliff? I'm just thinking about this now.
Right.
So I'm not sure what the reason for that is, but it seems like all you have to do is get to the midbar 3 mil in. But according to Rashi's interpretation, you know, you wait until the 12 mil are reached. So I don't know. Either way, I'll look in the back in a second. But either way, Rabbi Yehuda says, since it takes 3 mil to get to the midbar, so what should you do? So he says, so holchin mil, so have someone walk a mil, the chosen mil, and come back a mil, and then show in kadei mil, and then wait in place for 1 mil, and you'll know, okay, now he got to the midbar. The yodin shagia sar the midbar, and at that point you know the kohen gadol could start the next process. So there's no need for to have someone, anyone wave flags, have someone walk around. Now this is a very strange thing.
Yeah, because there's no raya. Maybe you stopped or maybe something happened.
Exactly. So it's also a very strange raya. Why would he do it, walk forward, walk back, and stay 1 mil? How do you know how to stand in place for 1 mil? If you know how to stand for 1 mil, why not just wait for 3 mil?
Correct.
So
once you walk forward and back, now you already have the time interval for what a mil walking is, because you could take half of that time, and then you could take that amount, and you can watch him stand.
Right. I guess in theory, but they probably also could have tested it beforehand. They probably knew from the previous years. It takes a mil, 12 minutes, I'd say, to walk a mil.
He tried.
He tested it out in Yom Kippur.
No, he tried to come with another thing. It's not so practical. But it's another way.
Right, so a number of interesting things here. A bunch of questions we have on this Mishnah.
No, the whole thing is like this. When holchim mil means that yekir shalem hamalavim et hamishaleach, they go with him.
Yeah.
So don't have to just walk 1 mil. They go with him 1 mil.
And then they come, these people.
And then they come back 1 mil because they cannot go for more than 1 mil because of the of the tefillin.
So you've accomplished 2 mil already.
But then they cannot go back because they're already, they will be away from the place. So they have to, once they know that, it's like they already know how much it took. So they wait for 1 more mil.
See,
it's the same thing. Doesn't matter who walks.
So they walk with him.
With
so
him.
They know his speed. That means.
Yeah, that's what it's saying here.
I see. Okay.
It says, "Yikir Yerushalayim hamelavim et hamishaleach." Olchim.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it as a strong way of, you know, of a siman.
Yeah, it's not scientific.
It's
not, no, and it could still be a takala. It could still be, you know, something.
If in the wine, in the mill, right, they're waiting, something then can happen.
Right, exactly. Or maybe, you know, the things that they prepared, they broke. You know, they did those. Bridges or whatever.
Or they start argue, and they forgot about timing, and he's already, you know.
Or the guy gets hungry and eats the goat.
I don't think he'll do that. I don't think it's not an idea of a food.
Offered food. Yeah.
So the Sfas Emes asks, before we go to Rabbi Shmuel, Sfas Emes asks, according to Rashi, Rashi says, why does the Kohen Gadol have to wait to start the next process until he knows that the goat has gotten to the midbar? Rashi quoted a pasuk because it says Shilach es hasar b'midbar, and then achar kach it says Veschel v'chatas yaktir hamizbecha. Sounds like there's an iser deraisa for the Kohen Gadol to start on iser, but there's a chiv deraisa that the Kohen Gadol has to wait until the sire gets to the midbar. He quotes a pasuk. So the Sfas Emes says, but according to Behuda, so why is it enough to just simply calculate when he gets there? Try to estimate when he gets there. You should have to know vadai when he gets there. Because
right,
there's a deraisa, right?
About it,
So Sfas Emes says, he argues in Rashi and says, Lanias Daidi, it's not a din deraisa. It's whatever it is. It's a din derabanan, a mesmachta, it's the order of the psukim. So you don't have to wait exactly when it gets to the midbar, but that's the next process. Just wait a few moments. But if it was a din deraisa, he doesn't understand the explanation of Yehuda, so therefore he thinks it's not a din deraisa that you have to wait. Now the Mishnah quotes a third opinion.
Okay. So they're walking out a meal, coming back a meal, and they're waiting a meal. How the Kohen Gadol knows that?
No, they tell him.
Who tells him?
The people, the Yekir Yerushalayim, as we just said, walked a mil, come back a mil, they wait a mil, and then the person says, by the way, now is the time
but
for the next...
But it's not like, you know, the mil, you're not going a mil from Beit HaMikdash, coming back to the same spot.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Okay. It's not there, you know, outside Yerushalayim, a mil.
So then the Gemara says, Misha quotes Rabbi Yishmael, Omer, Valo Simon Acher Hayalem. Wasn't there even a better simon than that? Lashon shel zehuras hayakasha al pischa shehechal. We said in the beginning, at least, they used to tie that string outside the hechal. So once they know it would turn white, when the sar was pushed off, it would turn white. Like the sar got to the cliff.
When it's pushed out.
Ah, exactly. So it seems to be something.
And it didn't always turn white.
Right, right.
That's even the bigger kasha.
Right. So it didn't always turn white.
Well, it knows it got there.
And according to
what color, but now I know I can start.
No, because he's saying that they kept part of the thing was inside the Beis HaMikdash. So if it turned white, it means that it was thrown.
But or all red.
No, so but red was originally red.
It was originally red?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Red means probably that they got trouble.
Right. Red is the original color. So if it stayed the way it was, there was no Mechikashim, wasn't
Mechaper.
So according to this, so Rabbi Shmuel says, though, when it would reach the midbar, it actually would get white. It wouldn't wait until the goat gets pushed off. So we know already from the last, what was it, yesterday, 2 days ago, that it is possible that it turns white before it pushes off. Remember, the Gemara wanted to know, why did they tie the string onto the goat? Because if you didn't, you tie it onto the rock, let's say, so then it might turn white before you push the goat off, and the Kohen Gadol, or the Kohen rather, would forget about it. So that's why they said tie it onto the head of the goat. So you see, I guess here in the case when it ties, I guess ideally, when they tie it to the hecha, the ulam, and once it reaches the midbar, it would then turn white. But if you have to, you first have to tie the rope for it to take effect. So in the case of nowadays, not that, but later on, when they used to tie it, when it got to the cliff, that's why it was delayed to turn white until it got to the cliff. But really, me'ikar de mederaisa, what are the criteria for it to turn to white? It has to be tied somewhere, and the sari has to get to the midbar. So again, originally when they tied it to the ulam and the star got to the midbar, it turns white. Later on, because it certain times it didn't turn white, people got very upset. They got sad, so they said, let's tie it when we get to the cliff. Only once it gets tied does it have the ability to turn white or not. That's why it was delayed, I believe, in general. So the Gemara says, again, let's finish this last line of Yishmael. Uchshegil sorry the midbar haya halashon malbin that would turn white when they got to the midbar. Shenemar im yihu chataeichem kesharam kishela gelbinu. So Amar Baye, to finish off the parak, Amar Baye, Shmamina Beis Chidudo B'Midbar Kaima. So we see here, the Beis Chidudo, where that's where Rabbi Yehuda said, that's the Yishalayim until Beis Chidudo, that's the amount of 3 mil. And that's where the Midbar begins. V'akamash Malan, the Kesavah Rabbi Yehuda came and Shagil Sari L'Midbar Nasis Mitzvaso. So we see, according to Rabbi Yehuda, once it reaches the Midbar, you already accomplished the Mitzvah. Now, it sounds like maybe according to the other opinions, though, according to maybe the Tanakhama, that no, the mitzvah is not done until it got to the cliff, and that's part of the machlokas. The first opinion said you have to have the people, the watchmen, standing from the tzuk up until the Yushalayim, while Rabbi Huda held, no, the distance you have to keep in mind is only from the midbar until Yushalayim. So it is machlokas between Tanakhama and Rabbi Huda.
That's what Rashi said, that's because he was talking to Tanakhama.
Exactly, right. So that is, as we said, it is a machlokas, as we noted. Hadron alach shnei siri. Okay, we start the second to last parak of Yuma. We're under 20 days, but we're 18 days away, I think.
What is the next masechta?
I think they do sukkah next.
I think it's right? Sukkah next, yeah.
Sukkah is about Sukkot?
Yeah. Sure. And then Rosh Hashanah, I think. The order is interesting that they do Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Yuma, Sukkah, because that's the order of the year. But Daf Yomi does Yuma, Rosh Hashanah, and Yuma Sukkah, Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Okay, says the new Mishnah, new parak. So, Bala Kohen Gadol Lekros. So now the Kohen Gadol has to, it's getting late. The Kohen Gadol has to start reading. He reads, he takes out the Sefer Torah, and he reads certain sections of the Parsha. In Ratzel Lekros with Big Day Butz, Kore. If he wants to wear, he finished all the Avodah Yom HaKippurim. The one thing left he has to do is go back to do Hotzos Kafa Machta. But what's left on his list is, he has to, next thing is he's going to do the Karba Musaf in the golden Begadim. And then he's going to do white Begadim to Hotzir Kafa Machta, and then white Begadim again to do Musaf. So he just finished the main part of the Yom HaKippur Mevodah, he's wearing white clothing. So says the Mishnah, Im Ratza Likros Be Big Day Butz Kori. If he wants to keep wearing his white Begadim, he's permitted to. Vim Lav, if he doesn't want to. Kori Bit Stalas Lovin Mishalo, he's allowed to wear his own personal clothing. I think his mother may have made for him, like a white robe of some sort he could wear also if he wanted. He doesn't have to wear the Big Day Lovin if he doesn't want to. Chazan HaKnesses, no Tel Sefer Torah. So Chazan Knesset is the Chazan of the Shul, of the Azara. Take the Sefer Torah. Nosan L'Rosh HaKnesses. We give it to the Rosh HaKnesses. Rosh HaKnesses. Nosan L'Sagan. Sagan Nosan L'Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol. Omri Mekabel. So the whole line of people, they pass on, eventually making its way, the Sefer Torah, making its way to the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol. Omri Mekabel. He would accept the Sefer Torah. V'kore Achrimos. The Parsha we've been learning about. V'ach Besor. Ach Besor is in Parsha Pinchas, where it talks about also the Karban Musaf on Yom Kippur. The goal of Sefer Torah, he would then close it up. Umanicha Becheko, he'd hold on to it. Vomer Yosemi Masha Karasi Lefnecha, more than I read in front of you, Kasav Khan is written here. And then he'd recite Besor Shabachum Shabikudim. Maybe I made a Mach Besor. Maybe that's not in Pinchas. Maybe this is Pinchas. Parsha Emor, I'm sorry. Ach Besor Rashi does this Parsha Emor. Parsha Emor is right next to Parsha Achimos. So he reads Achimos, jumps to Emor, which is all very close to each other. And then he says by heart, he reads the Psukim in Parsha's Pinchas, because that's too long to get to scroll over, to roll over to Parsha's Pinchas, is too far away. That he would say, again, Kazav Kanu Besar Shabachumish Hapikudim, Kore Alpeh, he read it by heart. Baruch Aleh Shmona Brachos, then afterwards, after reciting these three sections of the Torah, again, Achimos, Parsha Emor and then Parsha Pinchas, he would then say eight brachos. Al Torah, Val Havodah, Val Hodah, Val Machlas Havon, Mechilas Havon, Val Hamikdash Bifnei Atzmo, Val Yisrael Bifnei Atzmon, Val Yishlaim Bifnei Atzmo, Val Kohanim Bifnei Atzmon, Val Shar Tvila. And then he would say the rest of the Tvila, eight brachos there total. Gemara will explain what the rest of the Tvila is. But those are the eight brachos he would say when he would conclude. Now, there are a number of interesting things that come from this Mishnah. One thing is that he read Al-Peh. There's an Issa, the Gemara in Gittin tells us, you can't recite Psukim by heart. So how then was the Kohen Gadol permitted to say these Psukim by heart? So a number of interesting answers are given. One answer is given that only when it's coming to a Kriyas HaTorah B'tzibor, when you're being Motzei the Tzibor, is there a requirement. I think Tosfos Erechin answers this way. When it comes to being Motzei Acherim B'tzibor, that's when there's an Isser. But here it's not being motzi echerim. No one has an obligation. It's his obligation. It's a personal obligation. He happens to be reading it in public, but it's not being motzi echerim. So that's one of the reasons they say that you're allowed to read it by heart.
Why these spots and not the other ones?
Because achrimos is the main part of the avodah. There are also some sukkim about Yom Kippur later on, but to roll over while everybody's waiting Yom Kippur.
Also achrimos and emor, they're together.
Right next to you, exactly.
Two out of three.
Right. So that's so.
Different place.
Yeah.
There's two that are one close to another.
So they cannot bring two Sefer Torah like now, like today.
Right. I think they ask that question maybe. I think they say, I mean, the next stop, maybe they answer that you can have two Sefer Torah when it comes to two people reading, two Aliyahs. If one person has the Aliyah, then you cannot change Sefer Torah because it's Pagam in the first one. So here, one person has Shvi, one person has Maftir, so then you can have two Sefer Torah. But if the same person, in this case, the Kohen Gadol reads both them, you can't switch two Sefer Torah. I think the Gemara tomorrow says that. I guess we'll find out. Another answer they give is the only time it comes to the reciting Pesukim by heart is when you're reading a Kriya. These things are not considered a Kriya. It's considered just simply a din in the Avoda, not a din in the Kriya. It's a different type of, you happen to be reading, but it's not a din in Kriya, it's a din in the Avoda, Yom HaKippurim, so it's not subject to the Halakas, and a few other answers that are given as well. Another interesting thing here, Rashi writes Beis HaKnesses, he says, Hayasamach La'azara Bahar Bayis. Right, that they would have a base Knesset next to the Azara on Har Bayis. That shul, that's where they get the Sefer Torah from. There's a Rashi in Bava Basra which says that no, they would actually go. There's a Sefer Torah that was in the Aron Kodesh, in the Kodesh Kodashim. That Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, that was in the Kodesh Kodashim. That's the one that they would use. So there's a steer in Rashi's. Which Sefer Torah would they use? Would it be the one here that was in the Pesach Knesset, or would they use the Sefer Torah that was in the Kodesh, in the Aron Kodesh? That's a steer in Rashi's. So one answer is that no, one's Bayis Rishon, one's Bayis Sheni. Our Mishnah is talking about Bayis Sheni. Ideally, in Bayis Rishon, they would use the Sefer Torah that was found in the Aron. But Bayis Sheni, there's no Aron, so they had no choice but to use the Sefer Torah that was in the Beis HaKnesses. Okay. Now the Mishnah goes further and says, Haroa Kohen Gadol Kishu Kore Eina Ro'o Parvisayer. A person who observes the Kohen Gadol who recites these psukim is not able to see the par and sar being burnt. Because they took place at the same time. You choose one or the other. Lo mipnei she'ein rashai, not because you're not allowed to. Ela she'yisod derech rechoka umlechas shneim shava kachas, because they're very far from each other and they take place at the very same time. So it's just literally impossible to do it. Now Gemara says midikasani beitzelis lavan mishalo. The fact that the Kohen Gadol was permitted to wear his own personal robe, if he wanted, while reading the parshios of Achrimos, Michlal implies that the Kriya lav avodi. Kriya is not an avoda, because if Kriya were to be an avoda, you'd have to wear the Big Day Lavan.
Or at least the Big Day that the people were part of it.
Exactly.
Also, more than nothing than Lavan.
At least Big Day Zav, you mean?
No, I think the issue here is that the Tzibur had to be part of the funding for the to buy it, no or no?
That they had to be. That's Gemara told us, right. It has to be Michel Tzibur, right? So
here specifically is talking about that it, because it's not whether that's why that doesn't have to be white, or because it has to be it cannot be his alone.
Well, yeah, I guess it has to be for exactly. It can't be his own personal, but it has to be a Big Day Kahuna. So this implies that the Kriya is not part of the Avoda. The Kasani. Im Ratza Likros Big Day Butz Kare Shmasmi Na. So, and then the Mishnah says if he wants, he could leave on his white clothing. So what we learn from Shmasmi Na Big Day Kuna Nisnu Lehenas Behen, that you're allowed to get Hana from the Big Day Kuna. Because normally there's a machlok, as we'll see, that whether you get hanah from Big Day Kuna when you're not doing a voda. So here he's allowed to wear the Big Day Kuna when he's doing a non-avoda, namely the kriya. So you see, you're allowed to get hanah from the Big Day Kuna. He's allowed to wear it even though he's not performing an avoda. Gemara says no, dilma shiny. Maybe this is different. Shiny kriya the tzorich avoda. It's different. It's not actually an avoda, but it's tzorich avoda. It's for the purpose of avoda. It's a din in the avoda. So that's why you're allowed to wear it. But for just any other use of just walking outside without any connection to the avoda, that would be a problem. The bailan, that the question was posed, Big Day Kuna nisnu lehenas ben or lo nisnu lehenas ben, or is the Kohen Gadol, or any Kohen for that matter, allowed to get hana from the Big Day Kuna, or are they not allowed to? That was the question. So there's not a raya from here that you're allowed to, because Kriya is not just a non-avoda, Kriya is a tzorach avoda. Toshma, the attempt to bring a brisa, lo hayu yishanim b'Big Day Kodesh, so they will not sleep in the Big Day Kodesh. Shena hu delo. So says the brisa that you can't sleep. This is, I think, a Mishnah in Tamid, right? Yeah. Mishnah in Tamid says that the Kohen were not allowed to sleep in the Big Day Kuna. Shena hu delo. They were not allowed to sleep in the Big Day Kuna. Ha mechel achli, but they're allowed to eat it wearing the Big Day Kuna. So Gemara says, Dilma shayni achila the tzarech avodi. No, maybe eating is different, because eating is part of the parting of the avoda. Sleeping is not part of the avoda, so you can't bring a rye from there. Says the Gemara, Kidatan, how do we know that achila is tzarech avoda? Kidatan, like the Brisa says, v'achlu osam asher kufar bahem, and the Kohanim eat it, and when the Kohanim eat the chatas, it provides kapara for the people who are bringing the chatas. Melamecha Kohanim ochlin ubalim miskaprim. So you see that Kohen eats, and the owner of the cow, owner of the chatas, gets kapara. So says the Gemara, Sheinu delo. So okay, I'll make another diak. You can't sleep wearing the Big Day Kuna, but ha hilucha mahalcha, but we're allowed to walk wearing the Big Day Kuna. So this is supposed to be a raya that you can get hana from the Big Day Kuna. The Gemara says, no, but din hu dahalucha namilo. No, it's also, even walking won't be permitted. So why is this stress sleeping? The Sefer Yitzrech Leib, the only stressed sleeping, because it had to teach me the end of that mission, Tamid, where the end of the mission has told us, Poshin u'makaflin u'manichin tachas Rashem. The end of the Mishnah told us that when they would go to sleep, they would take off the Big Day Kuna, they would fold them up nicely, and then put it underneath their heads, or really next to the head, not a question whether underneath or next to the heads, but that's, the Gemara, I think, we'll address that in a moment. Tomorrow we'll do that. What comes out from here, there's no raya in either direction whether or not you could get hana from this Big Tikuna when not performing the avoda or not. Okay, so stop here. Sorry about the delay again.